today is the first official day in Massachusetts that educators can start to schedule appointments with the state for vaccinations. And already the governor and the teachers' unions are at odds about how that's working and how it should work. This comes after last week when Governor Baker moved educators up in line to receive their shots. We will in a few moments hear from the head of one of the state's teachers' unions after today's meeting, but we want to start by turning to WBUR education reporter Carrie Young. Welcome back, Carrie.
Hi, Tiziana.
So lay out for us, Carrie, what is that issue here between the unions and the governor's office?
Yeah, I mean, what seems to be at issue here is the governor's office is taking issue, I guess, is a good way to put it, with some of the requests that they're hearing about setting aside vaccinations for this specific group of people, as opposed to just making them eligible for vaccinations, allowing them to compete for the slots with all of the other people who are currently eligible. And so that is where you're hearing a lot of those tension points coming from the governor's office.
All right. So we know slots opened this morning for educators and other school and childcare oriented employees, as well as others still trying to get slots. We know there's a limited supply of vaccines. There's about 450,000 people who are educators, work in schools, work in childcare, who are now eligible. How's the sign-up process going?
Well, the sign-up process went quickly this morning. There were about 40,000 new first dose appointments at the state's mass vaccination sites that were available for next week. And those were booked within just a matter of hours today. And there were some reports of folks having to sit in a virtual waiting room to book. Those wait times didn't seem to be too terribly long, maybe 40 minutes to a little bit over an hour. In addition to the supply that the state is getting from the federal government, there are also vaccine slots available at about 85 CVS stores in Massachusetts. And they have also made their registration open to educators. That's actually been the case since last week because of federal guidance. And so far, thousands of Massachusetts educators have signed up there too.
So on the return to in-person learning, the state's push to have more students in classrooms. We now have dates of April 5th for K through 5, April 28th for grades 6 through 8. What are you hearing in response to all of that?
I am hearing a range of things. And honestly, it really depends on who you ask. So when it comes to school leaders, like school committee members, for example, there is a really big frustration around just the whole situation, and not because of the dates necessarily that the Commissioner of Education has picked, but more because the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education voted last week to give the commissioner the power, this power that he has now, to force districts into following this deadline. They say that this kind of flies in the face of the system of local control that has really been governing school districts in the state for a while now, and has been, you know, one of the pillars that's guided schools through the pandemic, for better or for worse. Sometimes it's been frustrating on both sides, but it's what we've been following for a long time now. So there are some questions about the legality of this move. I don't believe any kind of legal suit has been filed, but I know that those questions have been raised. Teachers unions are also now pushing for a delay to the start dates that Commissioner Riley has asked for, April 5th, like you mentioned, for K to 5. And the reasoning behind that is it would allow a majority of teachers to get vaccinated. I spoke with Mary Najimy, the president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association, earlier today, and she says that a date shortly after April vacation, also known as spring break, would put us around April 19th, and she feels like that would be a lot better option.
By all calculations, the first shot could get into the arms of every educator. It'll be less disruptive because students will not come in for 2 weeks of school, leave for April vacation, and then come back. And districts simply need more plans because there's going to need to be a large-scale redoing of plans to move to full reentry.
So, Carrie, that's what you're hearing from the teachers union. Just briefly, before we go to a representative from one of the teachers unions, what are you hearing from students and parents about reopening schools fully?
Well, I mean, that really varies, too. You know, you've got parents on the one side who are very excited about this, you know, whether some parents have been reporting that their kids have been experiencing mental health issues or struggling with their mental health. Other parents have been saying that their kids have just been disengaged with school after having loved it before. you know, like that the remote or the hybrid system just isn't working. So for them, it's very exciting news. But other parents have told me that, you know, doesn't matter that full-time in-person school is an option, that they're still going to go for remote learning for the rest of the school year at least. Some cite safety reasons, just concerns over COVID still. And for others, it's more of a like consistency sort of thing. They don't want to change this close to summer break.
Okay, WBUR education reporter Carrie Young, stand by because I want to turn to another voice in this conversation, Beth Kontos, who's the president of the American Federation of Teachers in Massachusetts. Beth, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So lots of eyes watching the union's meeting with Massachusetts Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutters today. Just start by telling us what the meeting was about and what came out of it.
Sure. It actually was a very cordial meeting. This is either our fourth or fifth meeting. So, you know, it's wonderful that school staff, all school staff is now, as well as childcare workers, are eligible for vaccines. We've been advocating for that for a while. Obviously, the hard part is to acquire a vaccine. So we came up with a plan about a month ago, several union leaders that all have members that work in K through 12 schools. We got together, made a plan on how to keep school staff safe by delivering vaccines directly to school districts and to allow for more students to return to the building. So this is what our conversations have been about. And the plan involves firefighters who are trained, who are EMTs, that can administer the vaccines. And actually, they've already been doing it in congregate senior housing, as well as they were the ones that delivered the majority of the first responder vaccines. So we were just ready to go. And we had a plan for 20 of the 20 locations that had the highest viral counts. And we thought this would be a good place to start. And well, our meeting today was great. It was cordial. It's just like all the other meetings we've had. She likes our plan. The plan is already in place, but not delivering to educators.
Yes. Yeah. So I hear you on that. But right shortly after the meeting, the governor put out a strongly worded statement against it. I'm actually, and then he had a press conference this afternoon. I'm going to play a little sound from what he said this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We incorporated them into the current eligibility model starting today. And we set aside 4 days at the end of March and the beginning of April for educators, childcare workers, and K through 12 staff. But I am not going to be in a position where I take vaccine away from people who are extremely vulnerable, who have multiple medical conditions and are over the age of 65. To give it to a targeted population. We're just not going to play that game.
That sounds like a hard no.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny that that isn't at all what our meetings were like. So that was an extreme reaction. And at no time are we talking about taking vaccines again away from the elderly or hard hit populations. Quite frankly, it's untrue and defamatory. So we suggested that instead, some of the doses that are designated for educators at the mass vaccination sites to be sent to targeted communities so that we're sure that we are being very effective and targeted. And let's say the city of Chelsea, for example, where the infection rates have been very, very high. So let's go there. Target those school staff and be able to open a school with far more safety in mind. We actually, there's no verification as to who's getting the vaccine now, as to whether or not they actually work in a school.
So what are you hearing from teachers this morning as they attempted? Now, obviously, as Carrie Young told us, some appointments have been available privately through pharmacies because they get vaccines straight from the federal government. So we know that's been in play for a week. But for those trying to get one through the state today, what did you hear from teachers when that opened up today?
Well, I myself got up very early today to see what the supply looked like, right? And I logged in and I saw quite a few vaccines available and immediately started texting educator friends and said, hey, get your people on, there's vaccines. But once we were on for a little while, we realized that the queue, you get in a queue, but you don't actually get a vaccine appointment or a possibility of an appointment until 8:30 in the morning. Well, every educator in Massachusetts is working at 8:30 in the morning. So I'm not sure what the success rate was for the people that were waiting on that line.
All right.
You know, that's part of the problem is people are working and don't have the opportunity to secure these vaccines. Now, I got to say, there's 4 days coming that are set aside for educators. And Secretary Sutter said there were a total of 25,000 vaccines that would be in total available on those 4 days. We're saying thank you. We're very happy for that. And people are getting appointments through CVS. But again, there's quite a few people that are working in schools that the Department of Ed and the governor has said, we're going to double the number of students that are coming into your classrooms. The concern is about keeping the adults as well as the students and the community safe. So that's why
there's so much in there, right?
Yeah.
We could talk about this all day and there would still be more to talk about. I think in our remaining time where I want to focus is, I know you are aware that we have fault lines being exposed. We are in a scarcity situation. Oh, yeah. We have other essential workers who have not come forward in line yet. We have people over the age of 65 who qualify who still can't get an appointment. People are being pitted against each other.
Right.
The teachers' unions have been very clear about the demands for teachers to go back to school in a safe environment. How are you talking to other communities, other groups of essential workers, older adults, et cetera, about this unfortunate competition that people are in to get limited vaccines at this time? And how do you think about the teacher claim in that larger landscape?
You know, this is a direct fallout from not having proper planning at the national level in this past year. So we understand why there's that scarcity now. And we are trying to do what is best for our communities. And we do understand, and I think I've heard it clearly, that the world thinks that public schools are extremely important. I wouldn't be in this line of work if I didn't think so. Our students need us. I fully agree. I really think that we could have done an even better distribution, a more equitable distribution of vaccines early on, instead of vaccinating all the healthcare workers who do the computer programming and the accounting and such, that we could have directed that to the more vulnerable. You know, there's a lot of people vaccinated that are working at home. And that isn't what we need to do. We need to take care of the people who are working. If it was me, I would have made sure every Stop and Shop worker would have been in the lineup along with our healthcare. Because if we can't buy food, we certainly can't continue, right? We believe that we can work without a vaccine as long as we follow the CDC recommendations, including masking and 6-foot distancing and good hygiene. And it was the unions who advocated. The teachers spoke up. We needed to be sure we had warm water, we had soap, we had hand sanitizer in order to be safe with our students, for ourselves, but for them too. And not every school had everything they needed. And it was our advocacy that made sure that we had portable air filters, that we can open windows, and that we only use classrooms that have windows. So we're thinking about our students. Yes.
We're going to have to call it there. I do hope you'll come back again. That's Beth Contos, the president of the American Federation of Teachers of Massachusetts. Good. We'll look forward to talking to you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I want to turn back now to WBUR education reporter Carrie Young, just to wrap up here. Carrie, let's just get some response from you to what you just heard from Beth Contos.
I mean, she brings up a really good point about the idea of, you know, how it's scarcity that's causing a lot of these discussions and disagreements over the order of operations here. And even just sort of like, you know, when you hear the description coming from Governor Baker's office over, you know, why he feels like the or like why the teachers unions and the governor's office seem to be at odds right now. It's sort of like wording that they're sort of in between both of these parties here. You know, did you set aside vaccinations? Are you taking vaccinations away from others? You know, it's just a lot of this is caused by the tension that scarcity is creating.
So, Carrie, I think we're all reacting real time today to sort of the vehemence with which the Baker administration came out of that meeting. You could even hear it in Beth Kantos's reaction. What do you think comes next, given what unfolded today? I know that's kind of a broad question, but help me, Carrie. What comes next?
What comes next? That's a great question. You know, I mean, everyone's goal is to return to quote unquote normal. I think there is going to be patience involved. I think there's also going to be more negotiating between all parties involved in the education system here. And so, you know, and also just learning some lessons that the pandemic has sort of forced us to learn is I think what I'm watching for next anyway.
And are there any big lessons a year in, maybe just one you could share with us that you think we have learned?
Well, I mean, one thing that I've been struck by, I guess, is hearing that one of the silver linings maybe that has come from some of this is a lot of school leaders are saying, you know, we've actually gotten a lot closer and have developed really strong relationships with a lot of our families that didn't exist in the same way before the pandemic. So that's one thing. And also teachers have told me a lot that because of remote learning, while yes, it had a lot of faults, there were parts of it that taught them different things about student engagement, that when remote learning is no longer a thing, they're going to be carrying parts of that forward.
All right. That is a satisfying answer. Thank you, education reporter Carrie Young. Thanks.
You're welcome.